The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
G'day and welcome to Waiting for Doom. It's a podcast about the Doom Patrol, and there's no Doom Patrol comic right now, so we are waiting for it to come back.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can also reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also reach us on our Facebook page. And all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And you can also check us and some other great podcasts out on the Inner Circle Comics site.
Oh, and I'm Paul, and I'm Mike's very good friend, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we also have a Twitter show account, which is sentient, called Wilfred, and he's at WFDpod.
Yes, this is true. This week, we are going to be looking at a couple of issues from the Kupperberg-Larsen run from the late 80s. So, and they go into outer space and all sorts of cool stuff happens. But first, how was your week in comics and such, Paul?
My week in comics? It's nondescript. Nothing much to speak of. But we did receive an email this week that I wanted to refer to.
Of course.
Well, I'll refer to it as the email we got this week. And it's from Scott Arthur. And he said, "Hello, Doomfolk. First of all, it's great having you back these past couple of weeks, isn't it? Anyway, since you haven't mentioned it in the 2 February podcasts, I wanted to know if you've been getting the television show Legends of Tomorrow in Australia. It's a spin-off of The Flash and Arrow, but unlike those shows, it has more than just name-drop ties to the Doom Patrol. In a 2-part story set in 1986, they meet Valentina Vostok in Russia. I don't know what you want me to reveal regarding spoilers or if you've been getting the episodes imminently. They aired in the US on February 11th and 18th, and they were known as White Knights and Failsafe. And yes, most of the episode names are old movie titles, just like Degrassi episodes are named after old pop songs." Mike, are you aware of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, or D-Clot, as I like to call it?
You're so cool calling it D-Clot. I am aware of D-Clot. I've seen lots of chatter online, and this past weekend, I finally got round to watching most of it. Huzzah! So I have seen the 2-part pilot story, and I have seen the episodes that Scott has mentioned with Valentina Vostok in it. And I kind of enjoyed them. I thought they were pretty cool. I only saw part of the 3rd episode because I had some technical issues with my Wi-Fi setup. But I think it's a good, fun show. I got a couple of issues with it, mainly with the dialogue, in that there's quite often a setup where character A will say something, and before the audience can even think of it for themselves, character B has already said the next logical thing. Let's go and do this over here because da da da. And character B says, "Oh, well, of course, that can only mean blah, 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 blah." And it's like, maybe dial that back a little bit. And Vandal Savage isn't quite as imposing a threat physically as I recall him from the comics. He seems a bit more toned and muscly, whereas I'm used to Vandal Savage being like a big hulking dude that's still, you know, got centuries of knowledge behind him and is still quite evil. And the guy playing him, yeah, he kind of catches that, but I just kind of imagined him being slightly larger and even more imposing. But other than that, you know, I think it's good fun. I think it's a really good entry into the DC universe. I have a lot of fun with it. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I really loved the first 2 episodes of the pilot, and that they were so much fun. And I just love the interactions and the, you know, all that 70s stuff was great. I was a little disappointed by the 3rd ep. I thought that was just bogged down, and it seemed like just a rehash of the you know, oh, it's another fight with Vandal Savage and this is how it's going to go again.
Yeah.
So that one is a little bit frustrating. But the two-parter with Valentina Vostok was pretty good, and I enjoyed them going off to Russia. Had a bit of stakes and consequences with, you know, the characters getting pretty beaten up in jail, in the gulag.
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting, though. It was a... I didn't expect Valentina Vostok to be such a villainess.
No.
You know, she wasn't a particularly nice character, and she was totally down with working for Vandal.
Yeah.
And as far as a negative woman connection, she was much more in the Firestorm realm than negative woman, wasn't she?
Yes, this is true.
So,
yes.
I mean, at one point she has Firestorm's powers, and I think they sort of overload her at the end, which leads to her vanishing, which... does sort of leave the door open for a negative woman return at some point.
That's what I was
thinking.
And yeah,
I think people theorise that Vandal may put together a team to oppose the legends, the D-clots.
Right. Yes, the D-clots. Yeah, so it's a good start to the show. Yeah, it gets a little bit... they need something other than Vandal to go up against all the time, I think. A little bit more diversity. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like a bit like Doctor Who if every time they face the Master.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Nice and
But nice. I'm hoping Negative Woman returns and she's like the opponent of Firestorm in power and ability, which should be good. But yes. I mean, you know, I've noticed what they do on these shows, and they tend to have an approach that leads back around to, you know, they introduce a character, it's not quite the version that we know, and eventually they do some sort of arc with the character and then bring it to be, hey, look, it is this character, or someone connected to them becomes, you know, that character, and it's very close to the comics in the final iteration.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe this could be the start of... more interesting stuff with the Doom Patrol on TV. Good. Or maybe not. I don't know. But, I mean, part of me thinks also Valentina Vostok is not the first negative being. So maybe they're holding that for Larry at some point. Larry Traynor could be the first negative man, you know?
That'd be cool.
Because that's the most iconic one and the most, you know, well-known.
Mm.
Whereas Val has had several... lives as a, like a spy and as a, you know, a bureaucrat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I enjoy the show. It's not as good as The Flash, but it's probably better than Arrow.
I would agree with you on that call, yes. I still rate it, but yeah, I think Flash is, of the ones I've seen, because I've still not seen Supergirl yet, Flash is definitely up there. And yeah, D-Clots, yeah, I think it's good. I do like a lot of the character interactions. I think my favourites on there are Professor Stein, because he's such a cranky old bastard, and Leonard Snart. I am falling in love with Captain Cold on that show, and from, you know, the Flash as well. He's just, I don't know whether it's the character, because I haven't really delved into the Rogues Gallery before, or whether it's Wentworth Miller's acting in that role. I just, yeah, he does it so well. He's just so good in that role. Yeah,
it shouldn't work and it does. Yeah, he's terrific. And I you know, my whole family loves his portrayal on the show, his approach.
He's great. Yes.
It's good stuff. And Scott continues in his email, so we'll split it up. And he said, the other more pressing question is the Doom Clock impacted by other media? My instinct is no, that individual members appearing in video games or whatnot are worth mentioning, but the clock is for the team manifesting comics. But it's your clock. If you decide otherwise, do I get a mention?
Well, Scott, you are getting a mention as we speak. but you're correct. That's the idea behind the Doom Clock, in that we're waiting for them to return in comics first and foremost, because that's where we first encounter them and that's where we see them and read them the most. It's great when they appear in other media, such as like the Batman Brave and the Bold episode and Val in D-Clots just this week. But yeah, it's the clock is essentially based on the comic book appearances. So yeah, good call.
What's that ticking? We're going from D clock to the Doom clock.
Oh, wordplay.
High five me, man.
Sorry, I bumped my mic a bit. Okay, so speak of the Doom clock, and it appears. And it's telling us, once again, that the last issue of the Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run, cover dated July 2011, and went on sale May 4th that same year. So it's been 4 years and 43 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. Getting close to the 5-year anniversary. Not that that's something good to celebrate. The last appearance of the team was 29 weeks ago in 2 different comics. First up, All-Star Section 8, number 3. Had a cameo of the team in a big splash page of all the DC heroes. And also Justice League United 12, where we see a cameo of the team as Stargirl's recruiting Robot Man for the JLU's next mission. This week in Doom Patrol history, back in 2003, for the princely sum of approximately $2.50, saw the release of issue 18 of volume 3, the John R. Cody and Tan Eng Huat run. And this issue was kind of interesting because it was a Doom Patrol story that featured the Doom Patrol but wasn't actually a Doom Patrol story. It was called Once Upon a Time, and it basically told the legend of ancient Chinese royalty. And there was a bit of an adventure there. So it told the story using the Doom Patrol team of the time. And Beast Boy even made an appearance. So it was a bit wacky and kind of cool and a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Must cover that one day.
We'll get to the Arcudi run one day. Yeah, there's still plenty of time. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're getting back to the Kupperberg run, volume 2, and we're going to do 2 stellar issues from that run, number 11 and number 12. Mm. So, firstly, these came out. When did they come out? The first one came out in August 1988, according to the cover. Second one came out September 1988, according to the cover. But according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, which gives amazing facts like this, the first one came out April 26, 1988. And the second one came out May 31st, 1988. So, and they were $1 each. Oh. And both were edited by Robert Greenberger, who is still around today and seems like a real nice bloke from what I've heard.
Cool.
Anyway, the one that I'm looking at is number 11. It's called Betrayed by Larry Trainer. That's a bit of a spoiler in the title, isn't it?
Just a bit, yeah.
All right. Back to the housekeeping. This is by Paul Kupperberg. It's Eric Larson on pencils, Gary Martin on inks, letters by Johnny Workman Jr. He's been around a long time, hasn't he? Yeah. Colorist Carl Gafford, and it's got a Eric Larson, Gary Martin joint cover, which is very good. It shows two villains triumphant over the Doom Patrol with a split down the middle. So anyway, but we won't spoil what's there. It's a little box. You know they did the little box where the barcode used is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine has a picture of Scott just looking curious.
Hot hands.
Hot hands. Anyway, let's get into it. So, Betrayed by Larry Trainer opens with a splash page of Cliff Steele getting torn to pieces by the plastic men that belong to Gargoax. So take a drink, everybody. And yes, he says, no, stop it, you're killing me. And then he turns the page and we see he's asleep on the couch and he's just woken up from a dream with his big shovel jaw. And he says, oh, you know, he's obviously, his subconscious is worried about Gargoax, who owns the Plastic Men, because he stole nuclear missiles a few issues ago.
Mm.
So that's a bit of a concern. And then we cut to space. Who are we speaking of? Look, he appears. It's Gargoax, and he is bigger than ever.
Yes, he's humongous in this story.
Yeah, I don't think I'm being mean to say he's a big fat dude, but he is incredibly large in this one, and all his minions are sort of ensprawled in front of him, and he's filling up a chair the size of a, I don't know what you'd call it, several baths the size of this chair. Yes, and he's talking about his plans to conquer Earth, but first he's got to take out the Doom Patrol. So he said, prepare my assault ship. We're going to Earth to destroy the Doom Patrol. Yay!
That old trick again.
Anyway, now, if you remember a few issues ago, Larry Traynor left on a secret assignment of his own making, and he's ended up at Bell Rev Prison in Louisiana, which is home of the Suicide Squad, and where lots of villains in the DCU tend to get locked up. Mm-hmm. And he's basically conning some scientist who works there, and he's saying that he wanted to know more about Reactron and how Reactron would have the secret to curing his own radiation sickness. And then he tricks the guy in leaving the room to look for some paperwork that he's already hidden. And says, thanks, Ron. So Ron is the name of the scientist. And then he pulls some stuff out of his wheelchair. Is it an action chair? It could be an old action chair that he's borrowed from the chief.
It's, I'll call it a low-tech action chair. Yeah.
Yeah. So he wakes Reactron up and rigs a new thing on Reactron's chest, which is the, if you're familiar with Reactron, he is spectacularly gaudy. Like he's yellow and purple. He has like crisscrossed red sort of atom bands across his chest, and he's got a yellow head. And anyway, so he fits a new thing on the atom bands across his chest and wakes him up. Then he does a bit of reminiscing about the origin of Reactron. So Reactron was a Vietnam soldier who was a bit of a hard ass and went too hard and too violent on innocent villagers. And he did this in front of Josh Clay, who's also in the Doom Patrol as Tempest. And Tempest was horrified by this and blasted this guy, Martin Kroll, and then basically went MIA, so ran away. And then Kroll, it must have activated something inside him, which I would call the metagene at this time in DC Comics history, and he became Reactron. And then they fought him with with Power Girl, according to this version. So we've had a bit of a crisis revision. So if you want to find the comic where Supergirl and the Doom Patrol team up to take down Reactron, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You could find The Adventures of Supergirl and look at that, but this is what you're seeing here. Anyway, so handy flashback done with, and we see that Kroll is now awake, and Larry is basically going to blackmail him into doing his bidding so he can blow him up and scatter his atoms around unless Reactron does what he wants. So, anyway, cut to the Doom Patrol headquarters in Kansas. So we've gone from Louisiana to Kansas, and there we go, the crowd protesting out the front, freaks go home. That's burning in little bubbling plot line there for later. Anyway, the Doom Patrol have got a new plane, so everyone's very excited, particularly Scott, who's trying to touch it, and everyone's like, don't touch it. Anyway, and Val is the pilot, and she's a very serious woman because she's covered in bandages, and she can't have love with Josh, and she's very uncomfortable around Josh. So she's spending all the time in the hangar away from the med bay where Josh hangs out. Then we see that Arani is doing her workout to recover after being injured by shrapnel back in issue 9. And then she does one of her rousing speeches where she tells everyone that they can't focus on anything else except what she wants them to focus on. And she is funding the team and they should all get in line. Etc. You know, everyone's very inspired by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Josh starts working out, and he has, at this point, he's being drawn with muscles the size of elephant legs.
he's very muscly in this scene.
Yes, and Rhea Lodestone is watching him work out, and we get a good shot of her butt from Eric Larson. And
I don't know how anyone could seriously exercise in what she's wearing. I mean, really, come on. It's barely there.
It's really unclear if Rhea is wearing a skin-coloured leotard under her butt floss or...
I don't think she is.
Yeah, there's a bit of underboob. It's all... Yeah, it's... it's somehow... It's not really sexy. Anyway.
Yeah, oh, the 80s.
Yes. So the members of the Doom Patrol who didn't go working out are flying in the Doom Jet. And so we've got Val, Hot Hands, and Cliff. And then suddenly they're grabbed in the tractor beam that belongs to Gargoax. And then the
plastic men burst into the plane. So we've got red and yellow and blue plastic men, and they attack everybody. One of them looks like they're shoving Val on the boob out of the way.
Hey, yeah, he is. Oh, that's a bit rude.
That's not good.
No.
That's not nice.
Wow.
Yeah. And before the action gets too exciting, we cut away to see an alley where, yeah, Larry's got his van and he's got Reactron waiting in the van. And he says, you know what to do, and you get ready, and you're going to do as I say or I'll blow you up. And yeah. And he's looking, trying to be intimidating as an old man, bandaged old man with a cane. He does look really old there, doesn't he?
He does. He looks quite weakened at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want someone to look old, just make them walk with a cane. It tends to be good shorthand. Meanwhile, back on the plane, Hot Hands is getting his head shoved into a wall by a blue plastic man. And the whole plane is getting wrecked really bad. And all the plastic men seem intent on grabbing Cliff, and they grab him and they form like a chain of plastic men that sucks Cliff up into the sky away from the plane. There's a really nice touch here, a bit of writing, where Val is trying to put her wig back on. So you see that she's actually bald with the bandages, which makes a bit of sense when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a real surprise to Scott, who's kind of, shocked and, says, I never thought you wore it. And she said, the word is wig, Scott. Strap yourself in. You're landing. So they go back to the Doom Patrol headquarters. And as soon as they're out of the plane collapses like the Blues Brothers car at the end of the Blues Brothers. Just falls to bits. As the workout crew and Karma look on. And, and Scott is horrified that Cliff has been grabbed. And anyway, so he wants them to go and rescue him. But Josh says, no way, we've got to see what the military knows and get ready for action. And Val is going off to do something of her own, some sort of secret thing, make a call. Yeah. Meanwhile, in space, Cliff is now on Gygrex's base in space. And he gets dumped into a pit, and he decides, he remembers that he has infrared vision, so he can see in the dark, which I don't know why he needs, because it looks perfectly light to us reading. Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure he would recognize Gargwax's voice anyway. I found that a little bit odd. It's like, oh, I don't know who's taunting me from at the top of this pit. Oh, I'll need to use my infrared vision. Oh, of course, it's Gargwax. Right.
Oh, it's the guy who owns the plastic men that attacked me.
Yeah, yeah. Even Gargwax says, do not tell me you are surprised, robot man. It's like, yeah, Cliff, come on.
Yeah. But Cliff remembers that he has magnetic feet from which we saw a lot in the 60s.
Yes.
And starts to walk up the wall of the metal pit, and then he gets electrocuted by the force field at the top. So, and then he, Gargarex has a cack at that. He just has a great big laugh. And then he sends in a warrior whose name is Warrior.
Oh.
He's like a big guy. Blue metal armor with spiky shoulder pads, and he's got four arms. So two are just, he's got his clenched fists, and the other two he has like some sort of weird matic hammer axe thing and a gun. So he's ready. He's ready to fight. So yeah. Warrior puts the herd on Cliff and starts bashing him around. So Val is about to make she's pulling out the scrambler to make a secret call, and she's calling someone who can do the arrangements to help them rescue Cliff, when Reactron bursts through the window into her office and says, hello, baby.
Yeah.
It's very weird. And so she releases the negative woman energy to fight Reactron, and they shoot out into the sky with lots of blasts, and then he zaps her and shatters her a negative form, which she reforms, but she's then he does some ultraviolet radiation, and that really weakens her, so she starts to head back to the body. We find that Josh and Karma are there, and they're huddled over a body when the negative energy returns. And then Reactron flies in, and Josh starts fighting because they've got, history from Vietnam. And he's calling her him a deserter and a traitor.
Mm.
And, Josh says, the last thing I owe you is an explanation, as he gets punched. Yeah, it's a lot of infighting, and then Reactron basically shreds the negative energy being out of Val, and as she screams in pain, and then he's sort of overloading as he flies away, and they're tending to Val to see if she's okay. Then we cut back to space where Warrior is. How would you describe this battle for Cliff?
Well, it's not too good for Cliff, and it's not too good for everyone's liver because they're going to be taking a few drinks just on this page alone.
Yes. So in the first panel, he's ripping his crushed Cliff's arm, and as he flings him around, so Cliff pulls off his arm to fight with.
Take a drink.
And then in the second last panel on this page, he is standing on Cliff's junk and pulling his legs off.
Take two more drinks.
And then he blasts his remaining arm off.
Mm-hmm. Take another drink.
And Cliff is lying there as a torso.
Yeah, poor Cliff.
And he doesn't do any sort of Monty Python references. And then, Warrior pulls out a great big spiky bit of metal and looks up at Gargarax, who gives the thumbs down. And he smashes the metal spike into Cliff's head.
Take another drink.
Yeah. Do not drive after this comic.
Do not. That was pretty brutal, that fight. That was...
It's full on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we cut back to the van in the alley and where Larry is waiting, and Reactron returns. And then he's overloading, and Larry wants to regulate the flow, and then he explodes. And then we see that Larry is left in a smoking crater. The van is gone. And that is the end of the issue.
Talk about action-packed. Good grief.
I reckon this is probably my favorite Kupperberg Larsen issue.
I would agree. I think it was this story where I kind of became more comfortable with Larson's art on the team. But yeah, this was action-packed and just didn't let up.
Yeah, I mean, the art is crazy bombastic. It's so over the top. It's, you know, everything is bigger than it ought to be, and every, you know, every move is... Yeah, every muscle is rippling and bulging like an elephant. It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so what we see on the cover is Cliff getting shredded by a Warrior, and on the other side we see Reactron standing over Val's inert body.
Yeah. It was weird seeing Larry kind of become almost chief-like in his scheming to get the negative energy out of Val and back into himself. It seemed very odd and out of character, but I know that he's missing the negative energy in this storyline, and he wants it back that bad that he'll do anything to get it back into him, really.
He is acting incredibly selfishly, and we can see the ramifications on the team. Like, Val was about to help Cliff in some way when everything went when she gets attacked.
Yeah,
not good. Now, is there a second part to this, or is that the end?
There is indeed a second part to it, because Gargoax is in outer space still with all those nuclear missiles, so we've got to find out what happens next.
Okay, yes.
So, yes, issue 12, titled Invasion, written by Paul Kupperberg, penciled by Eric Larson. The inker on this one was Pablo Marcos, and we had John E. Workman Jr. on letters again, and Michelle Wolfman was a colorist, and the cover was again done by Eric Larson and Gary Martin. And this one's a bit noticeable because of Gargoax's enforcers, shall we call them? Kind of scary alien dominatrix type looking women surrounding the Doom Patrol. And Gargoax is on a big giant monitor. Oh, they're back, saying, "Find and kill the Doom Patrol." And it's like, well, they've already found them. So, you know.
There's one lady here and she's wearing spiky boots, but the spikes go all the way around the inside of her thighs, which... You'd be very careful walking with spikes on the inner thighs, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, look, she's, you know, alien fashion is obviously different to our own.
I've seen stuff like this on Earth.
Oh, really? That's wow. Waiting for Doom After Dark. Anyway, getting into the storyline, we cut back to Gargoax. He's gloating over his defeat of Robot Man and warriors behind him sort of, you know, tossing the headless torso up in the air. And Gargarax is now making his threat to the nations of the Earth, saying, you know, I'm in possession of nuclear weapons stolen from your own arsenal, and basically I'm here to conquer your planet. So I'm going to give you 12 of your Earth hours to surrender. Otherwise, you'll face annihilation. And who do we see as a first world leader intercepting this message? It's Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. He had more appearances in the 80s than Adam Strange, I reckon, in DC Comics.
He's there. Reagan's there with his secret team of you know, advisors, and one of them is a sort of older gent in a wheelchair who's saying he's been in communication with his agent in the Doom Patrol. I wonder who that could have been. Someone that possibly made a secret phone call in the previous issue.
Yeah.
And anyway, Reagan puts his hand on this gent's shoulder and saying, you know, it's very likely a suicide mission. We could turn this over to Amanda Waller. But this person says, no, it's already cost me one of my dearest friends I've ever had. And Reagan says, we can only pray his sacrifice wasn't in vain, Niles.
Could that be?
Well, he doesn't have a beard.
But he's got red hair.
He's got red hair. He's in a wheelchair. So we cut to NASA, and there's two space shuttle pilots freaking out about their weird cargo, which happens to be the Doom Patrol. And they're all wondering, you know, what major string pulling Val did to get them on board this rocket ship, because they're determined to go up and face Gargarax head on. And meanwhile, Gargarax's forces are all assembling, and he's got more rocket ships and plastic men kind of just floating out of space. And we see that Robot Man's still alive, just his brain is encased in a metal box, which is being sort of hung in suspended animation. And, of course, Cliff is, you know, verbally taunting Gargarax and giving him a bit of crap and, you know, keep on dreaming, Fatso. You know, the Doom Patrol will be here soon. Of course, Gargarax doesn't believe him. We then cut away to a hospital where Val's body is being watched over by a doctor. And, you know, they don't really know what they're meant to be doing with this strange patient they've just received. And it's at this point that we see the Negative Man energy floating around the city. Yes. And I think this is the first time we've actually seen Neg Man, his thoughts on the page as well, because normally they've always been two separate entities, and we never heard from Neg Man when Larry was always cheering him on. But now he's a total chatterbox. And he's saying that for whatever reason, it's Val's body that is drawing the negative energy, you know, back towards her. So Larry's unhappy about having to fight for control of it, even though he's got the negative energy back, and somehow he survived Reactron going kablooey last issue. Yeah. So it's all happening. The Doom Patrol are off in space. Reagan's secret...
Can you see how happy Scott is to be in space?
Scott is so thrilled by this whole adventure. He just doesn't shut up. He's like, wow, this is great. Woohoo, can I touch... What's that button do? And everyone's like, Scott, calm down.
And Arani's always telling everyone to shut up, and this is serious.
God, Arani. Ugh. So we cut back to Reagan's secret war room with his men, and they're talking about what they can possibly do to take on Gargarax. And Niles is saying to Reagan, you know, I've got faith in the Doom Patrol. You know, it'd be better if Cliff was there with them. And Reagan's like, well, you know, that's the tough thing about leadership. You know, we're the ones responsible, but we're sending these brave young people out to die. And this is when Niles say, they're the reason that you know, I don't want to see their faces when they go off to die anymore. They're the reason I'm in hiding. So it's like, maybe Arani wasn't crazy after all. So
maybe Chief should get over himself.
Look, he's having a bit of a moment. You know, he's sort of realizing that, you know, it's not all black and white. We cut back to Gargarax's space armada, and he's got this huge idiotic grin on his face, you know, about how Earth's attempt to stop him are going to be futile, and, you know, there's no stopping him now. And they use his tractor beam once again, this time to bring the space shuttle into his gigantic space base thing. And as his cronies board the ship, they find there's only two people on board, and that's the two space shuttle pilots, whereas the patrol themselves are actually floating outside the space base thanks to Lodestone's magnetic powers, keeping them secure to the outside. And she's ripped up a part of the outer hull and sneaking them in. And of course, Scott's still going, you know, wow, this is just so awesome. Look, we're in outer space still. It's like, gosh, Scott, calm down. So we cut back to Earth briefly, and we see that Negman's still flying around, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And he's like, you know, I'm aware, thanks to the situation board in our headquarters, that Gargoax is, you know, on the attack. I've got no choice. I've got to use my powers for good again and help the team out. Maybe a little bit late there, but yeah. So the patrol are starting to sneak around the space base, and of course, they get discovered by one of Gargoax's many bizarre alien cronies, and all hell breaks loose. The team go on the attack. There's robots and aliens and the patrol fighting them, and Scott's just going crazy with joy.
Using the hot hands.
Using the hot hands on the aliens. I love the bit where Karma's freaking out because he doesn't know if his probability powers will work on alien brains at all. And he's worried he's going to get shot by a laser beam. And he's sort of ducking and weaving. And the aliens shit each other. And he goes, it works. Thank you, Lord. My powers work against them. So it's all on for young and old. The patrol are rampaging through the base and fighting every alien they come across. And it's at this point that Gargoax realizes that maybe he's in trouble. And Robot Man knows they're on the space base. He's starting to... He started to taunt Gargoax, saying, you know, better calm down, watch the blood pressure, fats.
Yeah.
Gargoax is, silence, Robot Man. I will hear none of your taunts. Try digging the wax out of your ears then, Gargoax, because you're dead meat. The patrol's here to kick your fat fanny.
Yep.
Gargoax erupts, pulls himself out of his gigantic chair, and smashes the container that's holding the brain, and it goes tumbling across the floor. The team have split up in their fight against the aliens, and Josh and Rhea are separated. They start fighting more aliens, and of course, Josh accidentally blows a hole in the wall, and they start getting sucked into outer space.
Did you notice just before they do that, there's totally a Skrull in amongst the aliens?
Skrull?
A Skrull from Marvel.
Oh,
Fantastic Four. Not a little rolled up thing of paper.
Yeah, not a Skrull. A Skrull.
A Skrull.
Right.
We've got Krull and Skrull.
Yes. Now that I'm looking at the page again, yes, you're right. He's down there in the corner grimacing and not looking too happy about it. So the rest of the team, meanwhile, are fighting their way through. And Scott realizes that they must be getting close because he's starting to pick up radio waves from Cliff. And he's saying his body's being smashed, but, you know, the radio in his brain casing still works, and we're getting close. He's on the bridge. So we're almost there. So they start racing on, fighting more aliens. Cut back to Rhea and Tempest, and just out of sheer luck, they survive not getting sucked out into space because all the other aliens and parts of the walls that are being blasted manage to plug up the hole. Of course.
Yeah.
And it's at this point that Josh says, oh, God, I don't believe it. I've lost my damn contact lenses. I hate it when that happens. It's like, that was a really odd... I mean, yeah, it's sure it'll happen, but that was an odd little break in the middle of the fight scene.
And there's this panel of him and Rhea on their hands and knees looking through the rubble for his contact lenses.
Yeah.
It's just... I don't know. I really like it.
Yeah. We cut quickly back to Earth, and the armed forces are all gathering. The Air Force is starting to power up their jets, and Negman actually comes on the scene, and he's carrying Larry Trainor's body, and they both hop into one of the jets and steal a jet. So that's how he's going to get up to help the team. And we cut back to Gargoax. He's freaking out. He's saying, I want them dead, dead, dead. You know, and look, to hell with it. Let's just launch two of the missiles. So we see two of the nuclear missiles fired from outer space, and they're heading towards Earth. And things are starting to get more frantic for the Doom Patrol as they're getting closer to the bridge. And then suddenly we see Gargoax unleash his protectors to stop the patrol from getting any closer to him, and they're called the Sirens. And this is the team of strangely dressed alien women. that are attacking the team.
Yeah.
And as this fight's breaking out, Gargrax is saying, "Your situation's hopeless, Doom Patrol, as is the Earth's. I've launched missiles at your planet. Surrender, and I shall recall them." And Cliff interrupts over the radio communicator and says, "Don't buy it. He's bluffing. He can't recall anything." And that's when Arani goes for hell for leather and unleashes a giant icy fist into Gargarax's face. And meanwhile, elsewhere in the starbase, Rhea and Josh have managed to completely destroy the engines. So everything's falling apart. The whole base is starting to explode as the fight's breaking out. We finally see Larry's made it into, Earth's very upper atmosphere with this jet that he's stolen. And as he gets there, he unleashes Negman. Back on the space base, they're finally fighting Gargoax and Warrior. And Karma's freaking out. And who gets the drop on Gargoax? Hot Hands does.
Hot Hands, yeah. He stands on his belly and holds his collar and heats up a hand and threatens him.
Yep. Yeah. Unfortunately, two of the other alien warriors say, either you let go of Gargoax or we'll blast your friend, and they're holding up Cliff's brain.
Case, like, little metal thing.
Yeah, it's encased in the box, and it's like, okay, what's going to happen here? Well, the ship's going to start falling apart even more. And they all start rolling around, and the fight breaks off. The sirens say, look, we signed on to protect Gargoax, but that didn't include suicide. This is a lost cause. Let's get the hell out of here. So the patrol are like, huzzah, we've got Cliff. Let's take Gargoax with us. So Lodestone uses her magnetic powers to lift him along, and they're running to meet the space shuttle pilots back at the hangar. Meanwhile, out in space, Negman has seen the nuclear missiles heading towards Earth, and he manages to fly through them, short-circuit their guidance systems. So that reminded me of very 60s Negman action right there,
flying
through stuff and doing it. But at that point, there's a massive explosion from the starbase, and Negman's energy gets completely torn apart. He's kind of just floating out there in the stars. Mm. So the patrol make their final dash to the spaceship. They're fighting more aliens and almost getting stopped. But thankfully, they, with their brains and their brawn, they overcome it. And Rhea, unfortunately, puts Gargoax down to the ground for a minute with her powers to join in on the fight. And when it's all over and she turns around, Gargoax is gone.
He's nimble.
For a big bastard, he's nimble. So the team all climb back into the space shuttle. They head back to Earth. Of course, they've saved the day, but Arani is not happy that Gargoax got away. And what does she say to the team? Of course, it will be better to get home so we can get back to the business of finding my husband without these infernal interruptions. Good God, Arani. Honestly. So the final scenes show a nurse watching over Valentina's body. And it's at that point that the negative energy actually bursts through the window and reunites with Val's body. And Val sits up and says, "Why are you screaming, nurse? What's going on?" And that's where it ends.
That's where it ends.
So what do you think of that one?
This two-parter is an absolute corker. It is insane. Yeah. You know, the art is amazing. Like, everything is just constantly...
Yeah,
flying through the air, upside down, blowing up, rotating, spinning. You know, it's really fun. There's some dodgy stuff, like Gargrex's. You see, you write down his gullet at one point, and it looks like no anatomy I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and there's a bit where Rhea looks incredibly rough. She looks suddenly like an 80-year-old woman at one point, but. I love it. Like, it's just people running everywhere with guns and things exploding, and yeah, the aliens are all over the place. It's...
Yeah, Larson really cut loose in this two-parter, just with the backgrounds and the scenery and the diversity in the aliens and the robots as well that the team face. It's just crazy stuff.
Yeah, and I think Kupperberg had realized at this point that Larson was bringing a different energy to the book and had started writing for it. So
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're seeing, you know, all this, the silly bit where they suddenly start looking for a contact lens is just pure farce in the middle of this. And I think that's a good look for this book.
Mm.
You know, the art is so over the top that, you know, everything can be bigger and sillier than it ought to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A very fun storyline. Yeah. And yeah, it was just non-stop, and oh god, it's just, it was great seeing Gargoax again too, and he was humong, he was gigantic in this story, and just that was, that itself was over the top for me, because yeah, as you said, when Hot Hands gets the drop on him and he's literally standing on Gargoax's belly, and I was thinking, holy hell, Gargoax has really put it on, you know.
Yeah, but good on, you know, Scott is, you know, he's becoming MVP to the team at this point.
Yeah, he's such a funny character, in that he's so annoying with his youthful naivety and just his joy at everything. But yeah, every now and then he'll surprise everyone on the team and the readers by just, you know, managing to save the day. I mean, we even called an episode that, you know, no way Hot Hand saves the day, you know?
Yeah.
He kind of does this time too.
Mm. Yeah. So I recommend these two issues if you wanted to get the, you know, a couple of quintessential Kupperberg Larsen issues. You can't go past 11 and 12 there.
Definitely.
They're full on, and it's a great Gargoax showcase.
Yes. We'll definitely have to put some of his best pictures up online this week.
Yeah. Mm. Shall we move on to the mailbag, O'Doom?
Let's do it.
Last week on the show, we asked everyone in the mailbag of Doom, who's the best evil organization? And we asked people not to put in political or tech company responses. And they kindly obliged. Anyway, so we heard from Mike Lapine at Lapine Is Me, and he said, Doom. So I presume he's meeting Latveria and Dr. Doom?
That was my assumption, yes.
Yes.
A bit of a one-man show, but yes, definitely Doom. We heard from Nicholas at NickRDE on Twitter, and he said, Hydra. Best penetration of the US, awesome health and dental, recycled its death lasers and robots.
Nice.
Yeah.
Important. Count Dracula, the Ryan Daly from Secret Origins podcast, he said Cobra or Cobra, depending on your pronunciation or pronunciation, from G.I. Joe.
Mm, that's a good one, actually. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We heard from Hero Sword Wielder, also known as at Karthik Kakarala, and he said, if the Dark Judges from Judge Dredd don't count, then either the Guild of Calamitous Intent from Venture Brothers, or the Hellfire Club from Marvel, as odd as that one gets. And he also added about the Dark Judges, which seems less clear in the original iteration compared to the frigging 9 extra ones in the IDW iteration. I didn't know they'd created more Dark Judges.
Oh, no. I remember
the 4 original ones, but
yeah. Awesome. Good one. Mm. I heard from Aaron Long at Juiced005, and he said Doom Patrols with a Z, and also Australians. So, yeah, keep it up, Aaron. One day you'll be funny.
At Ostrakus1, who's this week Hugh Lame Trinket Vice, said The Sith.
Yeah. The Sith?
Mm. Pretty bad.
Yeah. We heard from Steve T-Shirt Parking Meter, or Steve T-Shirt Meter, and he's at T-Park Met, and he said, Hail Hydra. Hmm.
Lots of love for Hydra. Moby-1 at Shmoby-1 said, The Rogues from Flash, but the funniest name has to be Ogre, the Organization for General Revenge and Enslavement.
What are they from?
I have no idea. I'm not sure if he clarified where Ogre was actually from, but he did provide us with a picture that had Huntress and Typhoon in it. Oh, saying, being scolded by some, you know, hooded figure saying, you failed in your assignment to liquidate Aquaman. You know that Ogre demands success. Failures are eliminated. So I'm guessing, and it's looking like very old art, so I'm guessing it's an old Aquaman group.
I don't think it's Aquaman. It's probably, maybe it's, I don't know. It looks like some obscure Justice League-y thing.
Mm, yeah. Yep.
Never heard of them. Very funny.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, we did hear from Martin Gray, but as usual, I've got to go find his answer. So, Martin, where are you? Here we go. He said, my favorite evil group, The 100. Of course, they gave Lois Lane an enemy that was all hers, well, mainly. And he put up a cover of Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. She's basically been spread eagled on a giant dartboard while all these people chuck darts at her as Superman flies off. And she thinks, Superman, come back. Don't let them do this to me. And yeah.
Wow.
That's it's a pretty kinky looking cover, I must say.
Oh, God.
Nice one, Martin.
Deary me. And Scott Arthur, also from his original email, has given us an answer as well. For his favorite evil organization, he said, "That's a toughie. Marvel has the best ones, or at least the best names. AIM sounds like a Fortune 500 company, and the Superman Revenge Squad sounds like the weekend LARP group put together by the guys who work in their mailroom. My favorite is probably Zodiac, a group made up of 12 heads of other criminal organizations, each with a different astrological sign. The thing that makes them really evil is that the group is founded on the premise that in the likely event that a member dies or becomes incapacitated, which is an occupational hazard of supervillains, that not only do they expect there to be plenty of crime lords to replace him, but there is so much criminal evil to choose from that they should have no trouble finding one with a specific astrological sign. I don't know if that's cynicism or optimism." Yeah.
That does seem to be very annoying. I mean, recruitment is hard enough in a big organization, but when you, what are your skill sets? Have you got your references? What's your birthday?
Oh, you're a Leo? Sorry. Not at this time. Thanks very much.
And we also heard from Dr. Ange, who sent us an email. He talked about the episode last week a little bit, and he said, "I'll admit that I haven't collected much Teen Titans over the last 20 years or so, only sampling things now and then, but your discussion of these issues makes me think I need to go out and find them. Sounds so interesting, and the Morrison references are like a cherry on the sundae. Plus, Rita! Mm-hmm. I also wonder if the Chief was trying to recruit Kid Devil to be the new Hot Hands in the team."
Well played.
As for the question of the week, as a Legion fan, I desperately wanted to say the Dark Circle, five people who have cloned armies out of themselves to take over the United Planets, later turned into some sort of cult in the 5 years later run. It all sounds so cool. But I can't. There is nothing cool about the Dark Circle. So I have to say, Hydra. Scarier the name, backed by some superpowered baddies at the leadership level. Hydra is pretty scary. I highly recommend Jonathan Hickman's Secret Warriors run, available in two big trades, to see how crazy cool they are. Lots of Hydra love, isn't there?
Mm. Yes. So, okay, Paul, which is your favourite evil organisation?
I was going to say Spectre, but that last movie really ruined it for me.
Still haven't seen that.
So, I guess I would like to say the Legions of Hell, from as seen in The Demon.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, they're old school evil. Yeah. Hmm. And under Garth Ennis's pen, they were very, very silly and funny. So.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. There's so many choices, and I could go for the obvious one, like the Brotherhood of Evil, but I'm going to jump on the bandwagon a little bit and also say Hydra, but Hydra in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because, you know, I knew enough about Hydra that they were the bad guys in the Marvel comics and that, but what happened in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, I love that. I love the Hydra reveal in that, and how, you know, it just continued the story from the first film so well, with all these secret plans and machinations and, oh, and, you know, when those two guys first lean into each other and say, you know, "Hail Hydra," I was like, "Oh my God, no!" So, yeah, I'll say Marvel Cinematic Universe Hydra. So
yeah, nice one.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's probably it for our show this week, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is. Thanks again for listening, guys. As always, you can contact us on Twitter at WFDpod, or via email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And next week, Paul, what are we talking about?
We're talking about Doom Patrol Volume 2, numbers 42 to 44, I think, which is back in the Grant Morrison run. So we're getting back to Flex Mentallo and things like that.
Ooh.
And we've got a question of the week, which is, what is the most inappropriate, impractical costume in comics? That's a hard one.
Oh, dear. So many choices. I think we looked at some of them tonight. Oh, dear. Now, that'll be interesting to see what the listeners get back to us with about.
Yeah.
God. Okay, that's our show for this week. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Thanks, Doom.